everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor here in the Greenville area, and you can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your real estate needs in the upstate of South Carolina. And please, if you like this content, even if you're never going to use me as your realtor for whatever reason, maybe you are a realtor, please just subscribe to the show. And if you can support it by leaving a review in Apple Podcasts, by liking or commenting on YouTube, any of those things, I would really appreciate it. Today, I have a special guest on the show, Chris Ryba, who is a former, current, future, whatever, client of mine. And we had a very interesting real estate experience dealing with a mortgage assumption. Chris has the honor of being my first ever client to assume a mortgage, which is a great strategy for getting lower rates. So we want to talk about that among some other things. But Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Stan. Excited to talk about real estate.
Yeah, awesome. And I just went to Topgolf with Chris. So this is kind of fun to see Chris.
And my wife too.
Yeah, and Chris's wife.
And she beat us both.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but yes, that did. All of that is factual. But by the way, if you're listening to this, I've got the Topgolf summer pass. I'm taking past clients, former clients, future clients, whatever, and just about anyone else. Now, if you're a lender, I'm being picky with my lenders. Okay. So just every lender in Greenville would want to go to Topgolf with me if I let them. But the rest of you guys, let me know. Some of you have already reached out to me. I've got it for about 45 more days as of this recording, which is the middle of July. I've got it through basically Labor Day. So hit me up if you want to meet up at Topgolf. But all right, Chris, interesting experience, but I feel like the whole thing, how we got to the mortgage assumption and all of that, is kind of tied to your story of how you ended up in Greenville. So why don't you tell the listeners kind of a little bit about your story, how you guys ended up in the Greenville area?
Yeah, certainly. So I grew up in Detroit. My wife is from Florida. We met in Savannah, where we lived for a couple years before living abroad for a year in Costa Rica. And that was ultimately where I started doing some research about real estate investing, getting more into real estate, and thinking about where we wanted to move once we moved back to the U.S. And so it was during that year abroad that I actually just Googled Greenville Real Estate Podcast, just on the off chance maybe someone made one, and lo and behold, I found you.
Someone does make one.
You did. And from there, I just started devouring all that content and researching Greenville and, you know, talking to my wife about the potential there, both real estate and just lifestyle wise. And part of your content really influenced me to really think, hey, this is a good place to put down some roots and invest.
That's awesome. So prior to that, well, you reached out to me, your email to me, didn't come through at first. I believe it was flagged as spam, if I remember correctly, because you guys were like in Costa Rica or like somewhere
on
like
a
that.
VPN in a foreign country. And yeah, exactly.
Which is a reminder to those of you listening, if you ever send me an email and I don't respond right away, I have not gotten the email. A lot of spam filters that my company has. We've had some pretty malicious spam come through that's messed up some people. So just be aware. My phone number is in the show notes. If you need to contact me on WhatsApp, it's tied to my phone number as well. Just real quick on the Greenville thing, like, what specifically was it that you were just like, this, I can go anywhere in the U.S., but I'm choosing Greenville?
Yeah, so we had previously lived in Savannah, so we had some, you know, experience of being in the Southeast. And I had visited, both my wife and I had independently visited Greenville once before, maybe just a weekend. So we at least had been here. We had some friends who had used to live here and work in the area and just said, you know, this is back in 2015. They said, oh, the West End, it's really happening. It's really coming up. And now it's, you know, West Greenville and it's all these other neighborhoods, but, you know, they loved the Swamp Rabbit Trail. They loved how active the city was. And, I thought, all right, you know, let's take a closer look at Greenville, and it's about the right size for us. It's not too big, not too small. My wife had previously lived in Miami, and that was too big of an experience. So Atlanta and Charlotte were out, but we were looking for something that was a little bit more of what I'd call a medium-sized city. Yeah, you know, we gave it a closer look, and listening to your podcast, just hearing about the real estate potential there. Also in 2022 and 2023, I think that statistic came out that said South Carolina was percentage wise the fastest growing state. And I think Greenville was the fastest growing county. So from a real estate perspective, it's hard to beat those kind of tailwinds of, sure, wow, this is a place that people want to be.
Yep. Interestingly, I mean, this is going to be only interesting to probably a very small group of people, but the Greater Greenville Association of Realtors recently became deemed by the National Association of Realtors a large association. So we are now considered right up there with the Miamis and the, wow, Houstons and the New Yorks as a large association because of how many realtors we have, which is reflective of the population, the amount of real estate transactions that are happening here.
Is that purely just a number of realtor thing, or is it, how do they?
No, I think, I believe that they're baking in a lot of transaction volume into that as well. And so it's like looking at the count of just how many are in the association, but honestly, we don't have substantively more than we had a few years ago. So I think they're kind of extrapolating based on transaction counts and other things. Don't quote me on that. If someone from NAR is listening to this and is not happy with me, I'm sorry. But anyway, I believe that there's a few things baked into that. Pivoting to the mortgage assumption thing. So I feel like I need to explain this to some people before we really get into the nuts and bolts of it. Some people may have not even, listening to this, may have not even heard of a mortgage assumption. But a mortgage assumption is essentially, you've got a seller that they have a mortgage, let's just say it's for $200,000, right? They started at $250,000, they paid it down to $200,000. They got it a few years ago when rates were super low. It's a 3% loan, which obviously you can't get now. In some cases, that mortgage can be assumable, okay? Now, if you've ever heard of subject to the mortgage purchases, that's not what we're talking about, okay? Subject to the mortgage continues to be in the name of the seller. It's just the deed that gets transferred over to the buyer. In a mortgage assumption, everything gets transferred over to the new buyer. The buyer takes over not just the mortgage payments, but the very mortgage itself. The name on the mortgage is replaced from the seller to the buyer. So the buyer has to be approved by the new lender. You can't just go in willy-nilly and just assume the mortgage. It's not a unilateral sort of thing. The lender has to agree to it as well. One thing that's really unique about mortgage assumptions is that, you know, in a normal real estate transaction, me as a realtor, I'm handling the vast majority of what's happening. Yes, there's always going to be the lender and my buyer client, if I'm representing the buyer, having kind of their own little conversations I have no control over. And sometimes that goes very poorly, as has been the case when sometimes my buyer clients have done financial things without telling me that mess up a transaction, but that's neither here nor there. But in the case of the mortgage assumption, there's not a whole lot that I can control, right? When I have a buyer client that comes on or a potential buyer client, the first thing I could do is connect them with one of my lender contacts and they can pre-approve them. And I can trust that pre-approval is trustworthy. When it comes to and with that, I can assume that when I do a financing contingency on a contract, that pretty much that it's going to work out unless the buyer, you know, goes out and buys a boat and messes up their credit or something. On the mortgage assumption side of things, I have zero control. They won't talk to me by and large. I mean, in this transaction, they had very little communication with me until the very, very end. And so Chris and his wife, they were handling everything. So this is a unique situation where actually I have textbook knowledge of mortgage assumptions, but Chris is actually the subject expert, even though Chris is not a realtor because he actually went through the assumption process. So all of that said, Chris, what exactly was your experience? And I'll start with this. Explain the process whereby you just found the home that you would eventually buy, knowing that the mortgage assumption was an option there from the very beginning.
For sure. And great explanation,
Yeah,
just to
hopefully I
get
didn't go on
people.
too. I went on a little bit longer than I planned to, so sorry
No,
about that.
that was a great explanation. So specifically, I had a app called Deal Machine, which a lot of investors might be familiar with. It is just a really strong aggregator of data that allows investors to market to potential properties. In this case, I was really just using it for reference to know a little bit more about the house, any debt that was on the house. And I did discover it was an FHA loan, which I knew from, some reading that those government-backed loans are typically, I don't know if it's always, but are typically assumable. And so really that was just the one thing that tipped me off. If I didn't have that, you could, just simply ask the buyer once that conversation starts. But for me, I had that knowledge and ahead of time.
Unfortunately, there are, and we were talking about this before we started recording. A lot of sellers don't even know if their mortgage is assumable or not. That's a question I frequently ask sellers, and they have to go try to dig up their paperwork or call their lender to even get the answer to that question. Now, the appeal, obviously, of an assumable loan is getting a loan at 3% versus. Currently, Mortgage News Daily has mortgage rates around like 6.8%. So, in case you're wondering why the heck would someone do this, that's the reason. And then, if you're wondering, well, why the heck doesn't everyone do this? Well, there's a catch to it. So, if the seller bought the house for 250 and now they paid it down to 200, you have to factor in that the seller and the subject property has appreciated, so it might be worth 300,000 now. So you've got a gap between 300,000 and 200,000 that you have to bridge. How do you bridge that? Well, you're not going to get another loan. That's almost goes without saying, at least not when you purchase it, right? You could maybe get a home equity line, after the fact or something like that, but you're going to have to put that 100K down. So that rules out people pretty, that rules out the majority of the population, especially people that are can only put down 5%. Chris and his wife were in a unique situation where they had made some good financial decisions and were in a good position to be able to make up the down payment. And then, again, potential options for home equity lines of credit and whatnot can pull that equity back out if need be. Now, Chris, I know at one point you and I talked about Roam. Did you utilize that Roam? That's a website that like aggregates some of these mortgage assumption details. I've had some of my seller clients get reached out to by Roam, but I've also seen some bad information on there. Did you use that at all?
I did use it just to confirm that, just to see if their sources were also indicating it was assumable. Yeah, for anyone listening, that one's more open, source data, I guess, or more open to the public. I also, while doing some research for the show, found that assumable.io sounds like another potential company. Yeah, I had looked into Roam, but specifically using their service, they actually want you to work with them and pay them a 1% fee at the transaction. So, in the end, we kind of opted for the DIY route.
Which is DIY, except that you had a realtor. Like if I can't figure that out, then what am I actually
What
doing?
good are you? Yeah.
I shouldn't have to have you pay me and also pay another service to assist with this.
Sure. And I should say for everyone listening, when I brought this up to Stan, he was not at all hesitant about, oh, I don't know, I've never done one of those, which I think was true. You had never
No, I hadn't.
worked one of those. And his thing was just, yeah, let's do it. Like, I want to learn how to do this. I want to put that feather in my cap. And so I really appreciated that. No hesitation to like, I'll do whatever, I need to do to figure out the contract and all that.
Well, I've done subject to the mortgage purchases before, and I was like, it can't possibly be harder than that, because those can be a pain. But yeah, I'm always excited. I do not shy away from new things as long as I feel competent to do it. One of the challenges specifically with this one was the different paperwork that was required. So when I went into this, the first thing I looked for was, okay, we use in Greenville, the state of South Carolina, the South Carolina Association of Realtors contracts is typically what we use in this area. That's not actually how it works in the entire state. There are some parts of the state that have local contracts that they use. But in Greenville, generally speaking, it's on state contracts. And so the state had a mortgage assumption contract that hadn't been updated in like 10 years, which is brutal because all the other contracts have been updated so many times. So there were so many things that were out of date. And I'm pleased to say that they have since updated it.
Oh,
So
really?
we
Oh,
were,
wow.
yes,
Okay.
now we have a nice, crisp, brand new mortgage assumption contract that is up with the times and comparable to the normal contract. But functionally, we ended up make and this was a conversation between me and Chris and his wife. We had a conversation with, okay, are there two options here whereby, we buy it with a mortgage assumption or we buy it without the mortgage assumption? What would be attractive in either of those scenarios? So without going into too much more detail on my end, Chris, what do you feel? What was that process like? And like, how did you guys kind of crunch numbers to kind of figure out, okay, if we get the mortgage assumption, this is the price that would work. If we don't, this is the price that would work.
Yeah. So when we came across this property, we really did like the property and we were prepared to buy it whether we had to assume, the mortgage or not.
Oh, and I need to clarify, these mortgage assumptions are only for owner occupied. You have to be an owner occupant in order to assume that mortgage. That's a very
Correct.
important
So
detail.
yeah, I guess just like any VA or FHA loan, you need to be the primary resident. So
Technically, VA, I think, does now allow rental properties to be purchased via VA. I
interesting.
believe that may be a change, but FHA has not updated that yet.
Interesting. So yeah, we knew we were going to be living in this house. And so the question was, how do we put an offer together that is attractive, that really kind of persuades the seller to consider and hopefully go with an assumption. So in Stan's example, right, if you have a $300,000 house, it's listed on the market, they pay down the mortgage to $200,000. So you got this $100,000 gap, you got to bring in equity and you got to figure out, do I want to offer $300,000 on this? Do I want to offer a little bit less and say, hey, I'll come in under, like a lot of people probably will say, okay, we'll offer 280 conventionally. I'll go to the bank, I'll put down 20% or 10%, I'll get a mortgage at today's rate. Well, then you somehow need to make that assumption more attractive, right? I mean, technically you're able to bite off a little more because you're getting such a better rate. I mean, that's how, we kind of thought about it. So we were willing to go a little bit higher. So in that example, maybe you give the seller exactly what they're asking for, the 300, or maybe even say, but hey, we'll give you 310. Really consider this option. A lot of people, like we had been talking about before the show, there's a huge education gap. So not only did we have to make the offer, but you also had to help the agent and the seller, who probably didn't even know if their mortgage was assumable, understand, hey, how is this transaction going to work? A lot of sellers, they see the bigger number, and that's obviously quite attractive to them. So,
For
in
sure.
this case, it worked out where, they saw that as, hey, I'm willing to go through this process. I think it'll be worth it. One thing I'll say is you might be thinking, well, of course, why wouldn't somebody just take the higher offer? Well, sometimes assumptions, can take longer. So when we originally went through this process, we were given about 2 months to close, not a more standard 30 days. When I had been doing research on Reddit, specifically with the mortgage company that was holding the mortgage for the seller, You know, I read some horror stories, so I was a little uncertain.
Well, also, you don't know, like, you just don't know how long it's going to take. Whereas if you're working with one of my lenders getting a conventional loan, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, we can get this closed. Most of them, minimum 28 days, mm-hmm. and a lot of them 21 days if you really mm-hmm. need to be aggressive. Yep. Mortgage assumption is just this big, like, well, it might be 2 months, it might be 3 months, who knows?
And right.
So that's a hard sell.
Yeah, it takes some of your decision making, like, is removed because I can't go pick the lender of my choosing, someone who I have a good relationship with. I'm just going to, by default, be working with whoever is servicing the owner's mortgage. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know how good is their assumption team. Is it a small outfit? Do they do these? Do they do 10 a year or 10 a week? So it's a huge wild card. It's just a big unknown. Before we made the offer, though, I think I did go on the mortgage servicer's website and saw that they had an assumptions department, and they
yeah,
had
I remember
some,
you telling me
some
this.
Brochures that you could actually give to a potential seller and say, hey, here's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. This is a real thing. And it would be a huge benefit for them to sell the house
yeah.
in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So to summarize, we made two offers. One was a lesser offer with just a standard conventional loan that you were pre-approved for, or conventional. I don't remember if it was conventional or FHA, but a standard government-backed loan that you were pre-approved for, and then a higher offer. And an important detail here, because you mentioned possibly going above the list price a lot. That's not necessarily a recommendation in this market, but if the home has just come on the market, that might be the strategy, right? You have to take into account, you know, if a home has been on the market for 2 months, you've got a lot more leverage than if a home mm-hmm. has been on the market for 24 hours. So you made those two offers, one that was higher with the mortgage assumption, one that was lower with just standard financing. Have you thought through how you would feel now? And with your knowledge of what you're paying and all of that, how would you feel if they hadn't accepted the mortgage assumption one, but had accepted the lower offer with the conventional loan?
I have thought about that. I think we probably would have, it would have really sucked to have missed out on that assumption. So I yeah. almost want to make a lower offer actually for that more conventional buy. But then again, I mean, like you said, you know, you kind of got to take the property, what it would appraise for into account, you know, how long it's been on the market. In our case, we made that offer, I think, a day or two after it was listed. So, you know, we had to think, okay, yeah, I can go low, but if there's five other people that have seen this house and it's attractive to potential buyers, we might just lose out on the deal altogether.
That's right.
So, you know, we could have made either work, you know, certainly financially and, you know, but it would have been a lot cooler to get the assumption. So, and yeah. luckily, I think, like I had mentioned, you know, sellers see a larger number and sometimes on market transactions, off market transactions, bigger number almost can cloud out any other thought about, oh, well, I'm just going to go with the largest one.
I would say about 50% of my seller clients over the years don't, if I send them an offer, all they look at is the headline number.
Sure.
And sometimes they'll be like, well, also they're asking you to pay $10,000 of their closing costs. And they're like, wait a minute, what page is that? So,
yeah. And in this case, you know, that was the risk that the seller was taking was just, hey, I, you know, this company's been servicing my loan. I've been paying them every month. Now I'm going to go through a process of getting them to qualify somebody to take over my mortgage. How long is it going to take? Do I have any control over the situation? So that can feel probably like a risk for some people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, part of my job in this was to reach out to that listing agent and just explain to him, you know, how we were going to approach it. That it wasn't going to be a risky situation where we were, you know, gonna let it fall to the wayside, or mm-hmm. I knew I could vouch for you as my client that you were gonna stay on top of things. And so I did a hard sell with that. And thankfully, the other agent, who is an experienced agent, had also never done a mortgage assumption. He was very much a, yeah, I'd love to do something like this. So it was a great meeting of the minds where everyone was cool with it, and the seller was happy to have, two offers and just take the higher one. And just he was flexible on his time frame for moving out. And well, he was already moved out, but in terms of cashing out, so it just worked out. So once we got all that paperwork squared away, went under contract. Now we're in the meat and potatoes part of the mortgage assumption, right? How did you like start the process with the lender?
Yeah, so it was actually pretty well established, the process. I mean, they had reached out. This would be I think they were called an assumption coordinator. So they actually had someone assigned to probably a handful of assumptions all over the U.S. And she was on my case with my wife and I. She reached out and said, "Hey, start filling out this application." Pretty standard. If anyone's filled out, any mortgage application, you're pretty much going through the same process, but with the idea that you're assuming a mortgage rather than applying for a new one. So they're just going to qualify you in a different way. But all that paperwork, I mean, it took us probably 4 hours. We sat down, we knocked it out, and submitted it. And within a couple of days, they had processed that and started to, gather more information, financials, run the credit checks, and start to, verify some of our rent, rent numbers and just income and whatnot.
I think you had to, didn't you pull money from a few different sources in order to pull together the down payment? Did they have any issues with any of that, or did that present any?
No, that was all pretty standard. We had cash, but I had also considered, do I take a loan out of my 401k? Do I pull some Roth IRA money? I kind of kicked around a few different ideas because when I originally brought this up to Stan, I don't think I was totally thinking about like how much money we would have to come up with. And then when you start to see those numbers, you're like, okay, wow, I'm gonna have to, figure out where to put this all together. And I wasn't exactly sure. We didn't have enough cash. I was like, man, I don't know how to make this all work. But in the end, I took some money out of my Roth IRA. And as far as the assumption goes, I'm sure this is probably similar with other transactions, but as long as they just see the wire, you have a documentation, hey, it goes from account A to account B. That was as complicated as it needed to be. And so they said, yeah, that's no problem. You usually just wait until you're closer to closing, which I'm sure is true for most transactions.
Yeah, for sure. So after initial contact was made with the lender, what were kind of your expectations for further communication from them? Like, did they initiate conversation? Did you have to? How frequently was that happening, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so I would say these folks are probably people who get blown up on email and their phones all the time. So they're kind of behind closed doors in a way. There's like a general email. You can kind of throw your email into this bin and, oh, I hope they get back to me. Otherwise, if you call them, a lot of times it just goes right to voicemail. I did find it a little tricky, usually having to call in a couple times. Hey, did you? Do you need anything from me?
And
Did
were
you
you
see
getting a
that
different
email?
person every time, or the same person?
Typically, if I was calling in the general number, yeah, it would be just somebody who would take a message and say, "Oh, yeah, I'll have your coordinator follow up with you."
Okay.
I think this is a good time to mention that, just anyone who's buying real estate, whether you're an investor or just a retail buyer, having this concept of extreme ownership is what I kind of went into this with, is I have extreme ownership of this transaction. Nobody is looking out for anybody more than myself. So I just need to stay on top of these people, be polite, but persistent was kind of my mentality. Because I didn't want, I knew time was a factor with this type of transaction. I had read some stories on Reddit of this mortgage company taking 3 to 4 months. Was it just the mortgage company or was it also the individual applying? Were they dragging their feet? You don't really know, but after 4 months, the deal fell out of contract and the sellers were just like, listen, this is taking too long. And they took another offer.
Not your
So
deal.
obviously
So
not my deal,
you're
but
saying the Reddit deal.
yeah, just I had read like, okay, that's a risk. You need to stay on top of this. And so I was pretty much following up with them about every 48 hours. Hey, do you need anything from us? What are you waiting on? There's so much paperwork you got to submit, as anyone knows who's bought a house. For us, the thing that was a little complicated was just the number of rentals that we had lived in the previous 2 years, including, you know, ones in Costa Rica. And so that became just a challenge of trying to run down all these verifications, which was really just because of our personal situation. But
well, I mean, we have to discuss that for a second, because that was like the most stressful part of the entire transaction, right? Wouldn't you say that getting some of those records was like the most stressful part of the whole thing for you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, taking out these big, you know, writing these big checks or termites in the crawl space. And it's all like, oh, that's nothing compared to what we had to go through with just trying to get our rent verified in another language, in another country.
So what did that take?
So specifically, in this case, we had lived in a house in Costa Rica for a whole year, and we rented from a family. And I had reached out to the landlord and specifically said, hey, just so you know, I'm going to need this documentation complete. It's going to look very formal. It's for a mortgage. I'm just going to need you to do it. Especially with the FHA, you know, rules and everything, I asked the coordinator, hey, can we kind of skirt this? Do we need this rental verification? Can you look past it? She said, unfortunately, no. She said she had dealt with some guy who was like living on the road for a few years, and he had 20 landlords all over Europe that she had to get verification from, and it was a nightmare. And I just said, all right, so that's what we got to do. And, you know, this individual spoke Spanish exclusively. And so we were communicating on WhatsApp and, you know, over the phone, and just trying to explain the, you know, the gravity of like, hey, we really need you to just write your name here, sign this piece of paper. In the end, we did have to rely on some friends down there to help make the deal go through, which involved buying some pizza and sending a pizza delivery to a house in Costa Rica to make sure that this piece of paper got signed. And thankfully, in the end, it did. But yeah, it did slow down the transaction considerably, probably at least a whole week lost on just trying to get some paperwork done.
I would sign a piece of paper for a slice of pizza or for
a whole large pizza. I mean, I thought it was a good deal.
Yeah, that sounds like a great deal. How do you do that? Do you just like Instacart in Costa Rica? Like, how do you get pizza delivered?
Yeah, one of our friends, he owns a pizza shop there.
Oh, that's convenient.
So
there you go.
We made some deals.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. What a process. You know, it reminds me a little bit of so back in the day, realtors oftentimes would handle clients' earnest money. That pretty much doesn't happen anymore. So like, actually,
what could go wrong there?
Yeah, I know. My company would actually hold the earnest money in escrow. And there are still some real estate firms that do that, even though the vast majority just pawn that off to our closing attorneys here. But you can imagine where this is going. I had one time a client that, we were in like a multi-day back and forth where they were trying to buy a house. And so I went ahead and had them, they were about to go on a trip and they didn't want to wire their earnest money. This is before wiring earnest money was like the thing that almost everyone does. So they actually went ahead and pre-wrote their earnest money check before they went under contract to give to me. Well, guess what? I also was going out of town, and not just out of town, out of the country. And I took that earnest check with me. And then they went under contract while I was in, you know, and I was handling it, obviously. I got them under contract while I was in another country. They're out of the country, or they're out of at least traveling. I can't remember if they were out of the country or not. No, I think that they were just traveling. And so, long story short, I realized way too late that I was in another country with earnest money, and it's just a personal check, but there was just nothing else that we could do. They weren't going to wire the money, and so the only thing I could do was to send it from my location, because I was there for my 10th anniversary. We were there for 10 days, and we were at the beginning of that stay, so I had to send it via DHL, and that was I had so little confidence it was going to make it to its destination. It was just like a guy came on in a bike, no uniform or anything, to receive my mail. And this was after I spent the entire day in the hotel lobby, mind you. Now, they're giving you obviously drinks and snacks and whatnot the whole time. But literally I had to spend, he was like 6 hours late from when I was told that he would arrive. So I spent a day in paradise waiting to DHL earnest money that I had accidentally taken to paradise. And thankfully that doesn't happen anymore because I don't handle clients' earnest money. So there's my overseas real estate story. Are there any other like twists and turns that you ran into?
Honestly, no. It other than that little snafu that caused a delay, just maybe not getting as much of an update as I would have liked from the mortgage company, and getting that good feeling like, oh, this is being handled. But in the end, they gave us about 8 weeks out from when the contract was ratified to closing, and it was just about shot just shy of 8 weeks. So in
When
the
did you finally start to feel like, was it like you weren't hearing anything from them for like several weeks?
It just took a couple of weeks to kind of go through. This isn't even underwriting. This is just like verification of various things. And then once it goes to underwriting, it's a few days. Then you get the clear to close. But even then, they don't, necessarily turn it around in a couple of days, because we got to get all the money handled and sent and, arranged it with the attorney. So, but no, in the end, it was a couple months. But for that seller waiting that extra month beyond a normal transaction, they walked away with, I think, a pretty good payday.
With a lot more money. Is there anything that you would do differently if you did another mortgage assumption? Would you handle it differently?
I think we had kind of talked about the potentially offering less on a conventional. I still like that strategy. The two offer strategy. So, maybe that. But otherwise, just that extreme ownership, I would probably have bugged them even more than I did. I just think you really have to be persistent, because it's one of those things that, you just always want to be top of mind, getting the transaction done. Time kills all deals, as people will say in the real estate world. And you don't want to be at one point during the process. We did reach back out to them and say, hey, are you waiting on anything? And it had been 5 days that it turned out they were waiting on something from us, and I didn't know it. And so that was frustrating.
No doubt. And the reality is that if you're a squeaky wheel in a situation like that, they are going to pay closer attention. Because they're going to be like, all right, we need to get this guy off our list. Like, and I guess maybe some workers might just get angry and just like maybe start ignoring your calls. But I wouldn't think it with a lender that they would do that, knowing what's at stake there. Now I know that there are some fees associated with the mortgage assumption process. Was the lender pretty upfront about those fees? How did you find out about that, and kind of what did that end up costing you at the end of the day?
So they provided a example settlement statement of what they thought our fees would be, like most lenders do. When it comes to assumption fees, my understanding is it's all state law, and it just varies from place to place. And the event, in the case of South Carolina, it's actually in the law that an assumption can't be more than the lesser of $400 or 1% of that transaction. So in this case, we had a $400 assumption fee, and that's what was charged. So just to give people an idea, there was no loan origination fee, no points, nothing like that. They're not originating a new loan. They're literally taking this loan, which only had 25 years and 2 months on it, and just putting it in my name. All the same terms, all the same, stipulations, and it's really just changing one name to the next. So in the end, yeah, to be able to look at your settlement sheet and see that where I'd normally expect a few thousand dollars worth of fees for a house of this, price, it was just $400. So that you know, if anyone who's, you know, bought a house in South Carolina, you know, knows that that typically is, what would you say for, you know, let's say sub $500,000 house. I mean, typically half of your money's probably getting paid to, you know, just originate the loan and everything, maybe another half to the attorney.
Yeah. It's going to vary from one person to the next, but I mean, oftentimes from one lender to the next, oftentimes those origination fees and whatnot come in between like $1,000 and $2,000 for something like that. But then, you know, that's just the origination fees. There might be a whole lot of other things. You know, you might have more escrow that you have to put in because you have a PMI, payment that has to be made. There's just a variety of things like that, that they start to add up, and they would add up to a lot more than $400. That much
certainly.
I can tell you.
And furthermore too, I mean, we didn't get an appraisal on the house. I mean, the lender, we could have, I guess, optionally we could have, but the lender didn't want one. I mean, they're already servicing the loan and we're putting down such a large down payment. There's just really not a lot of benefit. I think they don't have any risk they need to mitigate. I mean,
right.
They're really just transferring it from one person to the next. That did have its own kind of bumps after we closed, because a lot of times we would just, people would reach out to us thinking we were the previous owner from that mortgage company. And then some of the letters went to him and should have went to us. And there was a little bit of, you know, some confusion there, but
sure.
You know, probably no more than any other mortgage servicer.
Maybe so. Yeah. Has that been sorted at this point?
Yeah. It's all been taken care of.
Okay. But yeah. You know, lenders have all these different departments. And so I bet it's a matter of probably every single system, every single department has their own system. They probably have to update every single system,
exactly.
Which is, I would imagine, isn't probably a pretty antiquated system. I could be wrong. If you're a lender listening and you want to get angry at me, go shout at me on social media or something. I don't care. People are shouting at me on social media all the time. So one thing that you said prior to us, when we were just talking before we started recording for the show, is you were talking about, you made a great point that because the loan has already been paid off for not paid off, but paid down for the first few years, which in an amortization schedule is the heaviest interest years, that you're actually also benefiting from the fact that you're paying your monthly payments, whereas they would normally be paying almost all interest right now, you're paying a hefty amount of principal. Do you want to say anything on that?
I mean, I think that's a huge advantage here.
How many years in are you with regard to the loan?
Yeah, there's about 25 years left on the loan. So yes, did we pay a market price for the house? Sure. But we got a loan that's 25 years. So it's not 30.
Yep.
As you pointed out, those first 5 years are the heaviest interest payments of all your payments on the schedule. And, you know, saved a lot in closing costs and got a rate sub 3%. So, you know, at this point, the amount of interest that I'm going to pay in the next, you know, 25 years is, you know, maybe it's quite minimal.
Yeah. It's a fraction of what it would have been.
For sure. And the tipping point of the loan is about 2 years away. So in a couple of years, I'll be paying more towards my principal than to interest. So, you know, that's just a fantastic advantage to getting these. You know, unfortunately, I didn't buy in Greenville at that time to get that loan. But the next best thing is getting a low interest rate loan.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the future with this, you know,
for
with
sure.
The assumption.
And you'd also mentioned that doing this with the lower mortgage rate and whatnot, like you had been renting for a few years, and a lot of, you know, Gen Z is finding that they're having to, and even some millennials, to be honest, because now the average first time home buyer is like 38.
Yeah, I'm a millennial. You know, don't. I think so. Right in the meaty part.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. But regardless, Gen Z millennials, we have a situation where, I mean, not me and you, we're both homeowners, but our generation is struggling with breaking the rent cycle. And prior to 2020, it was very, very straightforward that I could tell people almost universally, your monthly payment, if you buy, will be cheaper than it will be if you rent. Well, that's not been the case since COVID. But based on what we were talking about before the show, it sounds like the mortgage assumption kind of made that a possibility again.
Yeah. So one thing, you know, that I was looking at was I'm looking at my cash flow every month and saying, hey, if I keep renting and I have renter's insurance and I've got pest control and, you know, et cetera, and all the fees that go along with that, you know, where am I shaking out every month versus say, if I buy this house conventionally versus if I buy it with the mortgage assumption? And just from a monthly cash flow standpoint, it was pretty attractive. It actually saved us money getting into this deal month to month. Now, obviously, we had to put a lot of money into the deal to make it go. But from a monthly standpoint, we have a very safe and secure loan where, you know, have a ton of equity in the house. It's a very easy payment to make. And, you know, of course, a lot of folks are just looking at that single P&I principal and interest payment versus rent. But obviously, owning a home is a lot more than that, taxes, insurance, capital expenses and everything. But even all that taken into account, I still feel like we're coming out ahead. So
that's awesome.
You know, and a lot of that is helped by the fact that a large portion, almost 50% of my mortgage payment itself, the principal and interest, I mean, all, you know, 50% of that is principal. So that's really going back into my pocket in a way, you know, and into my net worth, not going out the door. So,
yeah. And a lot of people aren't really thinking about it that way. They compare they understand the owning versus renting in the abstract, but they're not thinking about on the monthly, they're spending money towards a landlord's expenses and potential profit, versus what you're spending. You can actually break down that, like, some of that money is just functionally going back to you, when it's being spent on principal. It's functionally increasing your net worth, because your debt is getting lower every single month.
One thing I will say too, speaking of money that's not going back into my pocket, and people might be wondering about this, but PMI on an FHA loan, it does not go away for the life of the loan. So yes, I am paying PMI on this loan, and I will for 25 years if I hold it, if I don't refi it. But even then, it's still worth it. You know, you can just consider that, you know, taxes and insurance, and it's just a little bit more insurance, but it just pales in comparison that, you know, paying at 7% loan just pales in comparison to assuming.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Was there anything else you wanted to hit? I feel like we covered it from a lot of different angles. Is there anything in particular that you thought would be a good thing to mention that we haven't covered so far?
I mean, I think just a big part of this is helping educate people that this is an option, because, you know, before 2020, this just didn't seem like a very attractive thing, if at all. You know, why would you assume a loan with a higher rate when you can just go to the bank and ask for one with a lower rate?
That's right.
Well, now we're in a totally different economic landscape. And yeah, getting a loan at 7% on house prices that have gone up 20-30% in the past few years, you know, it does make it a lot more challenging. I've got friends who have bought in great parts of Greenville, really nice $500,000 plus parts of Greenville. And if they were to buy that same house today, their, you know, mortgage would triple.
Right.
So they are going to have these golden handcuffs. But if they have an FHA loan or a VA loan that's assumable, you know, that's a huge marketing plus if they ever do have to let that go, where they can say, hey, guys, look at this. You know, I've got an assumable loan. Look at this great rate. And people would be willing to pay more for that, potentially more than you know, they would get otherwise. So, you know, helping people know that this is an option and that there's a way to buy houses creatively like that in this market is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I try to be as creative as possible, obviously, with all of my clients. And the main thing is that, as we were talking about earlier, sometimes you just got to try things, even if you've never done it before. And I'm just glad that this was a good experience for you guys. And you know, in the end, you know, it's cliche, but it's not cliche. I'm happy when my clients are happy. Like, I've had, thankfully not a whole lot, but I've had a few situations where clients are not happy at the closing table, and or not happy in the aftermath of closing. And honestly, I would rather like give back my commission check than have to like go to sleep at night thinking about that. Like it's just a lousy feeling. So
Sure. Yeah.
that's factual. That might sound crazy, but I know the commissions will come. I never let that bother me. I just focus on my client satisfaction. And you guys, I'll say this: if anyone's interested in doing an Assumable loan, you should probably talk to Chris. And I will put his information in the show notes, a way to reach out to him. And if you're an investor, Chris wants to do some real estate investing in the future as well. So I'm sure he'd love to network, particularly if you're an investor that sometimes sells property below market value, et cetera, Chris would definitely be interested in talking to you about that. I think we've covered just about everything here. And you know, as far as the key nuts and bolts, I was going to say, if you're thinking about doing a mortgage assumption, obviously you can reach out to Chris and hopefully you guys can connect. But I'll just say that Chris and his wife were the model clients from the standpoint of, like, I knew that they were going to get everything done very quickly, because that was the really at the end of the day, the part that would have been stressful for me, and that could have caused the transaction to go haywire very quickly, is if you didn't have your foot on the pedal the whole time. And so I don't want to understate that. You made it sound really easy just on this podcast. But I know that there was a lot of, I mean, how many phone calls do you think you made or had in sum total?
Oh yeah, dozens for sure with these folks. And you know,
Not to
we had
not to mention the WhatsApp calls to Costa Rica.
Yeah, sure, exactly. You know, one thing I was going to say is just that, you know, every mortgage servicer is different, and that's what I was told by some of the people in my network who are mortgage brokers. And they said, you know, every mortgage servicer is different. Some servicers originate their own loans, some do not. You know, if you have a mortgage servicer who all they do is service loans, they take in the escrow payments, they pay the taxes, but they don't originate a loan, I would be very hesitant to go through an assumption process with them, because you're basically telling that mortgage servicer, hey, you got to now recreate this loan, qualify us. I don't even know if they would, you know, do it. I'm not
Yeah,
sure. You know,
interesting.
everyone's going to have their own policies, but you know, in this case, the servicer we had did originate loans. They did HELOCs, second mortgages, et cetera. So we were able to have a lot more confidence that, okay, there's an arm of this company that does this. So,
Yeah, for
you
sure.
know, we think that this can go through.
Yep, absolutely. Well, there you guys have it. A little bit about mortgage assumptions, which, you know, it used to be that you only heard about VA loans getting assumed, but now we're just in a different time. We have to adapt to the times. This is one way that we can. It's not going to be for everyone, but if you're someone that has a potential for a large down payment, but you still need to get a loan, that is where the Venn diagram overlaps. And you have to qualify for FHA. So there are some first-time home buyer-ish requirements. You don't technically have to be a first-time home buyer, but you have to qualify for FHA if you're assuming FHA. I do believe there's a few conventional loans that have become assumable in recent years. Although, again, these are basically not being marketed hardly ever at all. The just about the only time I see a loan being marketed as assumable is when it's VA.
Yeah. And on the VA front, I'm pretty sure you don't have to be a member of the military armed services at all. You can assume a VA loan without being so. And some US.
I think that's that didn't used to be the case, but I do think that they changed that recently. Although I'd have to go back and they're constantly changing that program. I would need to verify that to be 100%.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you were going to say?
And I think some USDA loans too. I mean, it's always going to be a government-backed loan, right? I mean, a non-government, just a regular bank is always going to want to take the higher interest and not let anyone assume it. But
USDA and FHA are very, very similar, and VA is too, although it's kind of its own thing. But if you guys have any questions about any of that, let me know. I'm happy to talk about it. I'll connect you with a lender that will try to convince you to not do a mortgage assumption because they don't get paid if you do that. But it's, you can't just have all your eggs in the mortgage assumption basket, right? The likelihood that you're going to successfully assume a loan, honestly, not very good. But it's one of those things where if opportunity meets preparation or preparation meets opportunity, that's when these sorts of things can come together. So let me know if you guys are interested. My contact information is in the show notes. I'll put Chris's in there as well. And you can like, rate, review, subscribe to the show, all of those good things. And lastly, Chris, thank you so much for coming on because I really appreciate you taking the time and just sharing, you know, some of what you went through. I'm sure this is really helpful to a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. And thanks for your willingness to tackle the mortgage assumption with us.
Absolutely.
We were very happy clients and glad it all worked out.
Awesome. Thank you guys for listening. We will talk again next time.